If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to the show. The number here is 914-803-4522. I am, of course, Carol Gold here with my co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
Steve, this next 30 minutes are going to go so fast, so I want to get right into it because there are several topics I want us to cover. Hopefully it will be, I don't know what order it'll be in, but here they are. I want to go over the tragedy today in Chattanooga with the loss of four Marines and three other people wounded. I want to go over some newly unfolding terms of the deal with Iran. I want to go over open borders, gun-free zones as it pertains particularly to today's shooting in Tennessee, even racial profiling, Steve. But where I want to start is this. I've been looking at this story. I've been following this story today as it unfolded in Chattanooga. And somewhere around 3 o'clock, Breitbart News and Fox News posted the name of the the murderer. He's dead, and his last name is Abdulaziz. He's Kuwaiti. And as of 6 o'clock, just now, when we went on the air, neither MSNBC, nor ABC, nor CBS, nor Yahoo News had his name posted. There was no indication that he was an Arab, that he was from Kuwait, that he was obviously an Islamic lone wolf terrorist, as we call them. So it's so fascinating to me, Steve, because you and I always talk on this show about media bias and how the media manipulates the consciousness of the country. If that had been a white person who shot a black youth or a white cop who had shot a black youth, that white cop, his ethnicity, his photo, his name, whether he was justified in the shooting or not, would have been all over those four mainstream outlets the minute they had that information. But for the last 3 hours, the ones I just named, MSNBC, ABC, CBS. Now, CBS, to its credit, posted his photo, but not his name. And MSNBC, ABC, and Yahoo just posted the name before we went on the air. MSNBC, ABC, and CBS just called it a shooting. There was no reference to the perpetrator, either through visual or through a posting of his name. That, to me, is one of the most stunning examples of how they promote their agenda when it suits them, and they tamp down the truth when it doesn't suit their agenda. So I don't know, Steve, if you want to comment on that before we move on or not.
Yeah, the first thing that I want to say is that when the news came out, my initial take was just that it had to be it was related to terrorism. I just knew it right away. Once I saw it was the Marines, once I saw it was a Navy shooting, that it was some act of terrorism. I didn't know exactly what the context would be, but I knew it was an act of terrorism. And just like you said, it took about 2 hours, 2.5 hours before I even saw the first reports that who the person was, that he was from an Arabic country, and that he was that he lived here in the United States. So I think part of the main issue on the as this relates to, I think, what we're going to go into a few different things here about immigration, is just the lack of reporting what the truth is. It just doesn't fit the narrative of what's taking place. And I'm going to turn it over to you, but I think there's a large element of really what's, let's call it what it is, of politics and voting blocks, and that is, I've come to the conclusion over the last 3 weeks studying this, is that it's really more an issue of voting more than anything else. So the media does not report on stories that'll impact or harm the narrative or the bias that they have. I'll turn it over to you and get what your thoughts are, but I wanted to explore that topic in a second, Carol.
Yeah, Steve, and by the way, just back up from your mic a little bit. You have great sound on tonight's show. It's just a little close to the mic. I agree with you. When I said it, when it doesn't suit their agenda, when I initially said how they report or don't report, the agenda that I was talking about was absolutely the agenda you just referenced, which is voting agenda. It's all about supporting a progressive mindset so that when they go to the polls, they continue to vote progressive candidates. And so I don't doubt at all that it's very much linked to that. But before we go down that road, and even if we have time to go down that road, I want to go, you know, these things are all interlinked in my mind. As I was thinking about it today, the shooting of the Marines today, obviously by a lone wolf Islamic extremist, fits right in with our open border problem. Not that he came in through an open border. I understand he went to university in Tennessee, owned a house valued at about $210,000 or $15,000 outside of Chattanooga. He's obviously been here a while. Whether he's a citizen or not, I don't know. And actually, whether he's even here legally or not, I don't know, because he certainly could have gone to university and bought a house without being here legally, based on how lax our reporting and our enforcing is. But just the fact that we know there is a fatwa, basically, from the Arab world against Westerners, and particularly against the United States. And we know that that is constantly fed by the Ayatollahs, by the mullahs. And we know that during these negotiations, they continued to chant and rant their hatred, death to America, death to Israel, the big Satan, the little Satan, etc. And so when you have, you know, to me, it's so easy to connect the dots. I don't know how the country is as quiet as it is. Number one, if you inhibit our military from defending themselves at home, which is what gun-free military bases in effect is, it's the inability to defend yourself on your home turf, on your home territory. And by the way, Bill Clinton disarmed those bases, and George Bush continued that policy. So I'm not blaming Barack Obama. I'm not blaming Democrats. I'm not blaming Republicans. I'm blaming all of them for making our military impotent on the homeland. But when you have gun-free zones, and by the way, the Aurora shooter was found guilty today, that decision came down, when you have gun-free zones like a theater or a school zone or a military base, and you have a stated goal of a group of people to kill Americans and to create havoc through terrorism, and you have open borders allowing these people to come across, as we know they have, not just Mexicans, people from all Middle Eastern countries have been caught coming across our border, or not caught, as it were. When you have all that happening, and then you have us capitulating and bowing down to this horrific deal that we just made with the Iranians, and there's some additional news on that, which we'll go into in a minute, you put all those dots together, and it is a recipe for disaster, both here at home and abroad in the Middle East. It's not just a problem for Israel. For people who think it still is just an Israeli problem, you're sleeping with your heads in the ground. You're both asleep and your head is in the ground, not to conflate and confuse analogies, but in fact, you're asleep and your head is buried, because it's not just the Middle Eastern problem. It's a problem here. It was a problem here today. We have four dead Marines. We call them our treasure for a reason. Marines in and of themselves, without being part of elite units, without being Green Berets or SEALs or anything else, Marines are our roughest, toughest, most ready branch of the military. They go in first and they do the hard work. And we've got one anchoring this show tonight, every night this show is on. And so when we have the kind of tragedy that we had today, unnecessary tragedy. Had any of them been armed, I would guess rather, had any of them had a weapon, maybe one of them would have died, but then the shooter would have died. That would have been that. That's the most he would have gotten off is one of them. And so putting all these dots together, I say to the country, Steve, how much longer can people make believe this isn't coming home to roost? I am astonished. I am truly astonished, Steve.
The thing that people are not getting is, although in this scenario it looks like this gentleman had lived here for a while.
Use that term loosely, please. Gentleman.
Yeah, well, yeah, I shouldn't say gentleman. This man has lived here for a while. You're right. Thank you for correcting me. The fact is that we have, you know, it just goes to show we have a problem documenting and checking the people that are coming into this country. What we have here is an issue of a massive amount of immigration that's taking place in our country, and we don't have the capacity or the ability anymore to really kind of monitor and check these to check the people that are coming in. I would say what worried me the most about this killing is where he's from. He's from Kuwait. Kuwait is a country that the United States liberated in the first Gulf War. Kuwait is actually is on the Gulf Coast and is actually very quite friendly with the U.S. The Kuwaiti people are actually quite wealthy. Due to the amount of oil, all Kuwaitis receive a check every year from the oil production. So they're one of the wealthiest people per capita, per person in the world. So when we're talking about Kuwait, we're talking about, in reality, Muslims that are for the most part, at peace with the West. It's a country that you can move about freely. It's a country that supports the U.S. The U.S. has had a large presence there for the whole time. So it's quite unusual that somebody from Kuwait would come here and do something like that, given the history and the relationship between the two countries. I've been to Kuwait on numerous occasions, and I can tell you it's a good thing to be an American there because they are very grateful for the Americans. So it's going to be interesting over the next few days to see, you know, how this seed was planted with this guy that he would actually do this, and especially to Marines who went to the country and liberated his country. So, again, there's a lot of questions, but I think the main question is where's our process of documenting these people? And secondly, just like you said, how is it possible that you have Marines that are not armed? It's ridiculous to me. Marines are trained first and foremost on accuracy of their weapons. That's the main principle that every Marine is a rifleman. So all Marines can handle weapons quite well and quite efficiently.
So, you know, you bring up Kuwait and the unlikelihood that such a bad seed could come out of Kuwait when everything you said is true about both their per capita wealth and also the fact that the United States liberated Kuwait and the Marines in particular. My theory here, and it's not as much a theory as I think it is an observation, we have to not think about the country that someone comes from. We have to understand that radical Islam is like a cancer. It's a disease that crosses all geographic lines. It even crosses cultures. We know we have Brits and Americans who have gone to join ISIL. It's not about the country. It's about the mindset. And, you know, I heard something said not too long ago, and it really rang true to me because of something I have said for a very long time. I remember when terrorism started, right after 9/11, actually, which is not when terrorism started. I realized Khobar Towers and the first attack on the Twin Towers was a lot earlier. But after 9/11, I spoke at many self-help programs, and I've done public speaking for years. And I said over and over again, the difference between the terrorists and us is that they have certainty. They're crazy, but they're certain in their craziness. They believe what they believe with absolute certainty, and there's no margin, there's no wiggle room. And what I used to say was, and still do, we in the West lack certainty. Because one of the things that freedom does for you, it gives you so many options, it gives you so many choices. It's easy to be fickle. It's hard to find things that you commit to and stay committed to because there's so much that's possible and so much around you in which you can immerse yourself. And so the attraction, believe it or not, for a lot of people, both people in the Arab world who are downtrodden, who don't see a future, or who were just raised on hate like the Palestinians, people in the Arab world or people in the West, who are downtrodden, poor, don't see ways out of ghetto situations, whatever the scenario, mental illness, whatever the scenario may be, it's very attractive to join a movement that has certainty. Because I think as humans, in a way, we crave it. We crave the known. We fear the unknown in many ways, not always for the right reasons, and maybe not always should we fear it at all, but we do. We like to know the boundaries. We like certainty. And so the attraction to these lunatics, the attraction to any fundamentalist belief, whether you're talking about fundamentalist Christians, Orthodox Jews, or terrorists, and I'm not equating them, I'm making a statement about narrow boundaries. If you are an Orthodox Jew, you know where all the boundaries are. If you are a fundamentalist Christian, you know where all the boundaries are because you don't cross them. You know where they are, and you know what you're supposed to believe, and you know how you're supposed to act, and you do so. If you're a terrorist, the same thing holds true. If you're a radical Islamist, it not only holds true, it offers some notoriety, it offers instant personal power. You got a weapon in your hand, you can take another life, you can chop off a head, you can rape a woman. It's a lot of power to offer someone who feels disempowered. So I think we have to completely disregard geographic lines, Steve, and we have to think in terms of this is a cancer. And like a cancer in a body that will attack the most vulnerable cells, so too will extremism, whether it's fascism or Nazism or Islamism, it will attack, so to speak, and attract the weakest cells. And the weakest cells will be the disenfranchised, will be the poor, will be the downtrodden, will be the ones raised on hate. That, at least that's my take on it, Steve.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think there's an element to that. I think what's happened, I think, you know, over the last, part of the education problem is that we have become a people that's uncertain. And I think part of it is, again, just the basics of history and of education was having a certain outcome of what the U.S. meant. And if you look at, you know, the education system over the, you know, I'd say even the past 20 years, I think it's really gone down of getting people to understand what America is about, of what it means and what it represents, and the ideal of what it means. That's how you bring people together, and that's how you get that people certain about what the American dream is. It's the only country in the world that's based on an ideal of freedom and liberty, and that message is no longer taught. What's being taught in the schools is something else, and what's being taught in the media is something else, that we are a racist country, that we have a past that's shameful, that we have done many things wrong in the world, that those things have to be corrected. So the message of us being certain of who we are is no longer taught, and most Americans are not secure or certain of what America means and what it means to defend it. Not just from a fighting standpoint, but from an intellectual standpoint. And I think all that uncertainty has seeped into the culture, and there's a consequence for that.
So let me just explore something you said. You said we're the only country in the world that's based on a principle of freedom and liberty. And I would take issue with that, Steve, because Israel is similarly founded and similarly situated. In fact, today there was an article online about AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is now mustering all of its forces to go up on the Hill and try to convince enough senators to vote to override a veto if the Congress sends Obama a no on this deal with Iran and Obama signs a veto. So in order to override the veto, they need two-thirds. They're not going to get it unless they get the Republicans and some Democrats. So AIPAC has gone public and said they're going to do their best up on the Hill, and they're probably the second most powerful lobby in the country next to the gun lobby, I think, next to the NRA. So there were a lot of comments under that article that I read, bloggers, commenters who were writing in and saying all sorts of bigoted and anti-Israeli statements about AIPAC in particular, saying the American Israel Public Affairs Committee ought to drop the word American. It's not about Israel. I mean, it's not about America. It's all about Israel. And then there were all those other comments that said things like the damn Jews and it's their fault and it's their problem and AIPAC is corrupt and blah, blah, blah. And I happened to have been affiliated with AIPAC decades ago. And I say that in full disclosure. I wasn't an employee, but I had founded a political action committee in Pennsylvania and I spent a lot of time in D.C. on the Hill. And I interfaced with AIPAC for an education of learning what the issues were. They're very good. They're actually technically, they're not a lobby technically, but they are an education source of information. And yes, they spend a lot of time trying to educate congressmen and senators on the situation. The point I want to make here, Steve, is that linking Israel and the United States together is not a bad thing to do for the simple reason that the values are very much the same. And when people think that organizations like AIPAC are all about only promoting Israel and Jews, they couldn't be more wrong. They're all about keeping the West, particularly the United States, educated and informed on all of the similarities and all of the benefits that each of those countries, both the United States and Israel, benefit from that mutual relationship. And so I don't think we're the only country. I do agree with you that we've lost who we are. We've lost why we should be proud to be Americans. We're not perfect. We've made a lot of mistakes. The Native American Indians, the Civil War, slavery, we've done some things wrong. But truly in the history of the human race, this is, and Israel is a microcosm, if this is the macrocosm, this is the greatest experiment in human history for individual freedom. Nothing like it has ever existed before, and nothing like it may ever exist again if we're not careful, and we may not last much longer if we're not careful. Along those lines, let me just share with our listeners, Steve, a little bit of what I learned about the deal today with Iran. That's even more troubling than what I already knew. First of all, no United States inspectors will be allowed into the Iranian nuclear plants. No United States inspectors. Now, from what I understand, we're the only ones with inspectors good enough and sufficient enough to know whether or not they're cheating. But we agreed that there would be no Americans because Iran demanded that there be no Americans. So who's going to go in? Well, the members of the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy, agency. And while that is an independently chartered agency, Steve, I don't know if you know this, it's independently chartered, but it answers to both the Security Council and the General Assembly of the United Nations. So it's an arm of the United Nations. And in fact, the members of the IAEA are all members of the General Assembly of the United Nations, which of course is historically incredibly anti-Israel. They vote against Israel, the General Assembly, every chance they get. And the only reason the Security Council doesn't as well is because we usually exercise our veto power that we have in the Security Council to stop all of these put forward before the UN to sanction Israel. So number one, the United States can't be part of the inspections. Number two, we promise in the deal to assist Iran in combating sabotage or threats against its nuclear program. This is inconceivable to me, because in essence that says that if Israel plans to attack, because they have to, because their future depends on it, and we know about it, under this agreement, we are obliged to notify Iran that Israel's going to attack them. Incredibly troubling, incredibly troublesome. And then the anytime anywhere inspections that they were blabbing about, and we know now, because they're not anywhere anytime, they have 24 days to respond in total to a request to come in and verify, which is more than enough time to conceal anything they were doing at a particular site. Wendy Sherman, who is the lead negotiator for the United States, actually came out and quoted and said, "We have been rhetorical from time to time when we use the words anywhere, anytime." Rhetorical is her word for lying. We've been rhetorical. So they're now admitting that there's no anywhere, anytime. And Elliot Abrams, who, if you remember, Steve, was with the Bush administration. He was actually, I think he was the former White House National Security Council director under George W. Bush. He said there is just no end to the concessions that we made at that table with Iran. So once again, when you tie this to everything we've talked about on the show, and then you tie this to what I have come to believe is an anti-American president that we currently have, Netanyahu is right. This deal is dangerous, not just for the United States. This deal is dangerous for the world.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add there, Seth.
Well, what I would encourage all of our listeners to do, you are not helpless or impotent in this situation. You must contact your senators and demand that they vote to override the presidential veto. It will likely come. And while we've talked about this on the show, I think yesterday, it's in fact Congress's fault that we even need to override the veto, because before the Congress voted recently, the president would have had to achieve a two-thirds majority in order to do this deal. And instead, Congress voted about 2 months ago to reverse the burden, and that the president would have to be overridden only by a two-thirds majority. So I said it a little complicated, but the burden has shifted, and we need two-thirds in the Senate to override the presidential veto. Call your senators, call your congressmen, and demand that if it comes to a presidential veto, that they will override it. They will vote to override it. I used to work on the Hill. I can tell, or work with members on the Hill, and I can tell you, they count every fax, they count every phone call, they count every email. It matters. So flood the phones, contact your representatives. And there is something you can do on this, because this is not yet a done deal. Thanks for listening to the show. We always are glad to have you here, and continuing to tell other people that this is a place where you can come, hopefully, to get a unique and unbiased view of what's going on in the world, and our best effort to give you a synopsis at least twice a week. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you always above the fray.